Hello, and welcome to Viewpoints, soon to be called Eyes on Success, a weekly program of information on the ever-changing world of accessibility. Now here are the hosts of this program, Nancy Goodman-Torpey and Peter Torpey.
Hello, I'm Nancy.
And I'm Pete. Making the transition to college can be a daunting task, even if you're not visually impaired. But if you are, it makes it even more difficult.
We'll speak with Rebecca, a visually impaired freshman at Carnegie Mellon University, about how she's taken this next step towards independence. Hear how she's handled the social, academic, and practical aspects of becoming a college student. But first to our tip of the week. This week's tip comes from Rebecca.
You should define yourself for your interests and things like that. You know, in my case, sometimes actually, you know, my interests in organizations like Foundation Fighting Blindness and such, like, it's part of that. But I think, you know, that's not the only part of it. You know, you want to introduce yourself to people for like who you are.
And what a great tip that is. One thing I thought of was you don't necessarily meet people and say, oh, I have brown hair or I'm 6 feet tall. People want to really be known for what they are and what they do, how they interact with other people, what their interests are.
Right. And being visually impaired is just one aspect of your life. It's not the whole thing. So it's good to remember that you're a complete person. And when you introduce yourself to people, you hope that they recognize that too, without getting distracted by the visual impairment and just glomming onto that one thing.
Well, it was like when I applied for jobs out of graduate school. I wrote up my resume and sent it around lots of places. I never mentioned that I was blind. It was just, I'm a physicist. And once I got to the interview, it was, oh, by the way, I'm a physicist and I happen to be blind.
Turning now to our low-tech item, let's meet Rebecca. So we've already had you on the show a couple of times, once to talk about what it was like getting through high school with a visual impairment, once we were talking to you about your experiences at ISAF in 11th grade, and then we talked to you again about your summer research at NYU.
Mm-hmm.
Can you reintroduce yourself and give us a couple of highlights since then? It was about a year ago we last talked to you.
Okay. My name is Rebecca. I'm 18 years old. When I was born, I was diagnosed with a rare form of retinal impairment, which leaves me legally blind. And now I'm in college. I'm a freshman at Carnegie Mellon in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. And my plan currently is to major in computational biology, which is a way to connect the biological sciences and different methods in computer science so that we can try to like quantify some of the things we understand in biology. And then also I want to maybe do two minors, one in mathematics and the other in machine learning, which is kind of like trying to teach computers to learn about new things. And a lot of what they call artificial intelligence or machine learning, it's used in like programming robots and different types of software.
Well, and you went back to ISAF and back to New York University for another summer of research.
So some people may not know what ISAF is. Can you just remind people?
Well, in high school, I participated in science research, and I worked on some research that actually involves trying to better understand why specific genetic mutations will influence genetic disorders. And I attended the International Science and Engineering Fair twice. We abbreviated ISEF. It's one of the largest science competitions in the world for high school students. And basically the point of ISEF is that like students can showcase their research on a world stage and get recognized for their accomplishments in research. It's kind of considered one of the like the Nobel Prizes for high school students. It's a really cool opportunity to even get to go. And last year, it was an even greater opportunity to be recognized as the best in my category. I was particularly in the biochemistry category.
And as scientists ourselves, we really recognize that this is one of the premier international competitions for students run by Intel, right?
It's sponsored by Intel, but there are also a lot of other corporations who kind of have a hand in it, too.
We first met Rebecca when she was in 11th grade. She actually attended the high school that I went to when I was a youngster, 400 miles away from here. And one of her teachers got in touch with me and asked if we could help mentor her in some of her science projects.
And we did, until she got way more advanced in biochemistry than either of us being physicists.
Pretty quickly.
We've really enjoyed getting to know Rebecca, and maybe you will too, although probably not as well as we've gotten to know her. If you'd like to listen to the earlier shows, she was on show 1112 about education, and she was talking about what kind of adaptations she made getting through high school and earlier grades. We had her back in show 1123 talking about doing science with a visual impairment, and she talked extensively about her experience at ICEF. And then in show 1143, we talked to her about what goes into selecting a college. Well, that was fairly early in her college selection process, and now she's selected a college, she started at a college, and we'll be talking to her about that experience.
She's a very insightful young lady and works very hard at getting what she wants done.
You are listening to Viewpoints.
This week's focus topic is getting started at college. Let's hear from Rebecca what this has really been like.
So remind us a little bit, what went into your decision-making process in selecting a college?
There were probably like a few main things that I considered when I was choosing a college. The first was location. I visited every school I applied to. There were some schools that I had visited that I just knew it wouldn't work for me. For example, there was one university I had visited that was basically built on a giant hill. And all I kept picturing was in the snow and in the rain, like how dangerous it would be for me to like be walking up and down that hill at night. Because like college is all about being freedom and independent. And it was really important for me that the location that I was in was like helpful to me for me being independent. Like it didn't restrict me going places and hanging out with my friends and being able to do different things. So that was one of the things. I also only looked at colleges in major cities because I can't drive. I need public transportation. And particularly in Pittsburgh, the bus system is free to students, which was a really big upside because that means I can basically go anywhere without having to worry about like having a car or like needing to get somewhere without a source of transportation. For me, it was also like picking the people, the environment. You know, everybody has different people that they click with. Well, I had done like an overnight program after I was accepted here. And when I was with the students, I really felt as if I had fit in with that group of students. And that's really important. Like they say, there's really a college for everyone. And like that definitely confirmed that that was the case for me. And then, I mean, I think the other main thing is every time I visited a college, I would also visit the Office of Disabilities, not necessarily to make sure that they would be able to accommodate me, because by law, they have to accommodate you, but to like meet the person, you know, because that's somebody who you're going to be working with for 4 years on different accommodations. So like to make sure that that would work out as well.
That's nice to know. If you go to college and you've got some special needs, whether it's a vision loss or something else, that there by law needs to be somebody there to help you deal with any kind of adaptations you need.
So in high school, you talked about having enough vision to get around the hallways with a cane and navigate that way. And you started out going to college navigating by a cane, right?
Yes, I do use my cane. It's important to use your cane in college because it's a new surroundings. Like my high school, I'd been there for 4 years, so I was very, very familiar, and I even still need to use the cane. Yeah, so I do use it.
And we also had a lot of discussions before you went to college about whether you should use a cane or invest the time in getting a guide dog and whether that was worth it. That was a tough decision, as I recall.
Yeah, I'm currently in the application process for getting a guide dog. So basically, like, if I decide at the end of the process that, you know, even though I'm eligible for one, that it may not be the best time, that's still going to be okay. Right now, I'm definitely leaning towards it. The trade-off between a guide dog and a cane is really that it's an extra set of eyes. And the thing about being in college and kind of starting on your first road to full independence is that, like, you're not always with people who know you have a visual impairment and know those little things to point out to you. And having that extra set of eyes is definitely really valuable. And it's a really good tool in, like, maintaining your safety if you're going someplace that you're not familiar with. And I think the way I kind of felt about it was that, you know, I didn't want to restrict myself to only going places that I was familiar with, especially since I'm involved in a lot of different things. So I think for me, that's why it was important to look into. I'm still, like, kind of in the application process, so, you know, we'll see how that goes. But I think it's important to realize when you get to college that you're not always going to be with people who understand what your visual impairment entails and, like, understands, like, how it affects the way you view the world and navigate the world. And I think, you know, a guide dog is a little bit more self-assurance in that direction.
And it was interesting to watch you go through that decision-making process. As I recall, when you first applied to college, you weren't so sure you needed or wanted a dog. But after you got there, I guess you realized that the circumstances were a little bit different than you'd envisioned. And after thinking more about it and experiencing some of the things you did at college, that's when you decided to opt for a dog. So I think that was a pretty wise decision. Sounds like you'll be quite happy with that.
So by the time you got into high school, many of the kids were aware of your visual impairment, and then you showed up on campus for college and presumably didn't know anybody, or maybe just a handful of people. How did the social accommodation work, where you had gotten used to having all the other students aware of your visual impairment, and now you were surrounded by people who weren't?
I think that's very much a personal thing. Like, I know before I had come to college, I spent a lot of time thinking about, I mean, everybody kind of goes through this thought process. Like, when you meet people for the first time, what do you want your first impression to be for them? And for me, I think the one thing I always had racing through my brain was, I don't want it to be, oh, you know, this person is visually impaired, particularly because a lot of people have never been exposed to somebody with a visual impairment. The idea of a cane is foreign to them. The idea of not necessarily having all of your vision, and not just like wearing glasses. Like, sometimes people will mistake wearing glasses for having a visual impairment, and that's not the case. I think it becomes important to think about, like, your own values and where you're going. And for me, like, I've never defined myself as Rebecca, the visual impaired person. I've always defined myself as, like, Rebecca, who's interested in science and interested in computers and has these goals for her life. And I think, you know, what was important to me was to make sure that stayed constant. And I think if you remember that, then when you present yourself with new people, you always have to just remember those things. That's actually one of the reasons I didn't use my cane during the orientation week. I had, like, a couple friends who I'd met who were, like, helping me out. But, you know, I didn't want that first impression to be, like, this is a visual impaired person. Because as much as I'd love to say people don't think that, and I kind of want people to meet, don't get me wrong, being visually impaired is a big part of my life, but it's not the only part of my life. And I think sometimes when people see somebody with a cane, they assume that. And I think what I wanted to do was to get rid of that assumption for a week and really just kind of, like, meet people, like, as, you know, me, you know, Rebecca, the person who has all these interests, not just Rebecca, the person who's visually impaired.
We were talking to some people about the blind using social media, and they talked about how Twitter and some of these other things they thought was really kind of interesting because you could meet new people and interact with them without the blindness thing being sort of this overbearing, you know, elephant in the room. And you just met them without being blind first and got over that.
It's interesting because when I had first met some people on Facebook, because we have a Carnegie Mellon class of 2016 group on Facebook, you know, as most colleges do, you know, I was talking to these people, and once I'm like, oh, wait, they don't even know I'm visually impaired, and it's not relevant either. You know, what you find is that when you take that out of the equation, it doesn't really factor into your conversations, which is really kind of confirmation that, like, a part of who you are, but it's not totally who you are. You should define yourself for your interests and things like that. You know, in my case, sometimes actually, you know, my interest in organizations like Foundation Fighting Blindness and such, like, it's part of that. But I think, you know, that's not the only part of it. You know, you want to introduce yourself to people for, like, who you are.
So I gather growing up you had your own room, and when you got to college, most freshmen get a roommate. How did that work out?
Not well. I initially had a roommate, but I think after, like, deciding, you know, what would work best for me, particularly because I have a form of vision that's, like, very light dependent. So, you know, if the light's too low, there's too much light, you know, I'm typically bothered by it. So I think it was the best decision, you know, to not have a roommate in college. And that's actually been working out great for me. And I think the one suggestion I would make to people is to live in a dorm that's communal, where, like, you don't necessarily have a suite where you have your own bathroom, but, like, in my hallway, the doors are always open, so I always have people to talk to, and people are always in my room talking to me when I'm here. And I think, like, that's the way to kind of, like, bridge the gap. But, you know, you don't necessarily have to have a roommate. Sometimes it just doesn't work out. And that's kind of part of college. You know, not all roommates work out. I mean, even my sighted friends have roommate problems.
I remember those from my college days.
Yeah.
So I gather there were some issues about your roommate not being careful to keep her stuff off the floor.
Yeah, people who don't have visual impairments, they don't necessarily make the considerations that we do about, like, safety and stuff like that. So, like, my roommate would just kind of leave her stuff on the floor and I would trip over it. So it was, that's a clear problem. But, like, the thing is that it's not her fault that, like, that's her lifestyle. And I think, like, you know, sometimes, you know, there's one thing to be friends with somebody. I'm still friends with my old roommate. She's a great person, but sometimes it just is, you don't have the same lifestyles. And as much as people may deny my statement, having a visual impairment is a certain type of lifestyle, whether you recognize it or not. There are little things that you do every day that are actually different from the way sighted people approach things. Like the fact that my room is always immaculate and people will come into my room, I'll be like, why is it so clean? They're like, you can see the floor. I'm like, yeah, I know. I want to keep it that way. Those little things that I view differently. It's like, not like I clean my room because I'm a neat freak. I clean my room because I don't want to trip over my own stuff.
You know, funny you should mention that about keeping things immaculate. Of course, Pete does the same thing. And heaven help me if I move something by more than 6 inches, although I've learned.
I keep everything in, like, everything has a place.
Yep, that's our house.
How do you find it again if you don't remember where you left it?
You got it. Even in the refrigerator, everything has its place.
Yeah.
You know, when our kids were young, little kids have a propensity to leave their toys around the floor and scattered around the room. Well, that wasn't going to happen in this house. So we had Daddy's bag. And if Daddy tripped on something, he took out Daddy's bag. And the toy went into Daddy's bag. And that got squirreled away someplace where the kids couldn't get at it for a few days. Pretty soon, it was pretty neat around this house.
And the kids knew they'd get the toy or whatever back in a couple of days, but for a couple of days they didn't have it. And they learned pretty quickly that if they left something on the floor, either it or Daddy was likely to get hurt, and neither one of those was a desirable effect.
Maybe you could have tried Rebecca's bag, Rebecca.
Yeah, I don't know that her roommate would have liked that.
So the other thing I thought was interesting, before this interview, we had talked to you, and you made some interesting insights into the fact that when you got to college, you realized in retrospect how kind of intermingled and dependent you were upon the people you knew, your family and you know, your peers at school, but you didn't realize that until you were out of that environment.
Yeah, I think especially for me, because my vision changes, you know, when you turn on or off the light switch. I was able to sometimes manage without my cane, but, like, if I was with my parents out to dinner, I would just, you know, grab on Two-Sided Guide kind of on an as-needed basis. But what you realize is that, you know, when you don't have people who have been with you for 18 years and kind of know your vision and things like that, like, you know, you miss those little hints. People would be like, oh, watch out for the curb. People who don't know you don't realize those kind of subtle little things. And I think it's easy when you're growing up to say, oh, yes, I'm independent. But then all of a sudden, when those little helpers kind of, they're not there anymore, you realize maybe I wasn't as independent as I thought I was. And it's not necessarily that being with your parents and friends is a bad thing. I think it's just like when you get to college, it's kind of like one of the final steps to being independent, realizing that you really do have to manage everywhere on your own. It's not that you shouldn't ask for help, but you won't always be able to ask for help. So you need to know what to do in all of those situations.
And the converse of that is some things that I had been doing that I didn't realize I was doing until one day somebody had seen me and Pete get out of the car and walk someplace. And they turned to me and said, "Wow, that's amazing. You line yourself up exactly so that he can reach your shoulder in the right spot." And I had never really thought about it, but after that person made the comment, I'm very aware. Every time we get out of the car and I walk around to his side, I do line myself up. And it's just one of these non-spoken communications that we have with each other that Pete always knows where to find the shoulder, and then we can keep going.
The college transition isn't easy, even if you are fully sighted. So many people have so much trouble with, you know, even the freshman year, even if they've done well in high school.
When you move to college, it's, you know, a lot of people will say, freedom, you're not with your parents anymore. But, like, it's not just about not being with your parents anymore. It's about, like, kind of starting to really see, you know, without the influence of your parents. Like, you know, when you were at home, you'd be like, oh, I want to do this. And, you know, there was always an opinion about it. I think, you know, kind of starting to make some of those decisions for yourself and, like, really see them for yourself and, like, get to try new things. Like, that's what college is all about. Like, you know, the fact that I'm saying, you know, realizing that I wasn't necessarily independent as I was, it's not a bad thing. It's just about the fact that, like, I'm discovering new things. I'm taking the opportunity, this kind of safe bubble of college where I get to explore new things and figuring some of those things out before I really do enter the real world. Because college is not the real world. College is like this bubble where they set up all these opportunities for you to explore really who you really are. And then, you know, once you've grown up another 4 years, you get to start venturing out.
Well, I think it's another transition process, right? I mean, life is full of transitions. And this is just another process that, moves you through that.
Yep, absolutely.
And getting back to what Rebecca said at the beginning about being visually impaired is just one aspect of her life and who she is, well, she's taking full advantage of exploring all of these new opportunities at college. And part of that is also exploring what it's like being in the world away from her nuclear family as a visually impaired person. But she's exploring all aspects, not just that.
It can be at a great and exciting time of life.
And in case you couldn't tell, she's excited about it. Now for this week's high-tech item, using technology to help deal with some of the aspects of college life. Lest we forget, students are there to get an education, and that means they need to deal with books and notes and all manner of materials which are otherwise normally distributed in print form. Just to take a really tangible example, can you deal with textbooks that are in print on paper, or do you get them in electronic format, or how do you deal with textbooks?
No. Once I get the list of books for all my classes, I send over that list to the person here at Carnegie Mellon who's in charge of disability resources, and he scans them for me.
Wow, that's interesting. Are you aware of the Bookshare College textbook program?
Yeah, I've used Bookshare before, but I really don't like it because there are a lot of versioning issues. Even when you have regular textbooks, sometimes it's hard to find the versions. Also, because when I do the enlarging of textbooks, I always have to buy a regular copy for myself. It's much easier just to scan it from scratch. So it's a lot easier because I can deal with the PDF. I'd rather use the PDF.
So when you say they scan it, they're not scanning it using OCR. You have an image of the text page that you can enlarge yourself?
Yeah, I'm just sent the PDF and then I enlarge the PDF myself.
Do you use CCTVs at all?
In college, not really, because, I mean, in college, I really found that using a CCTV wasn't necessarily the best approach. Because remember, like, a CCTV is not portable, but in college, not only are your classes not close together, they're in different buildings, and then, like, the buildings that your classes are in are different than the buildings you study in. And, like, I felt like if I was dependent upon a CCTV, then I would find the need to study in my room all the time, which is great because then you have, like, a nice quiet place. But, you know, when you're in a dorm, it's not always productive. So I actually have a mini CCTV. I think it's made by Humanware. And it's about the size of like a cell phone, maybe a little like a much larger cell phone, and basically has a camera that can help me with some little tasks. But really, I try to just get everything digitized and to scan everything, because it makes it more portable. That means I can go study with my friends and hang out with different people. And even like the university, like all of our computer labs have scanners. So it's very easy for me to just run into a computer lab and scan it instead of having it under a CCTV.
And then you use a laptop computer or some tablet with some magnification software to read your books?
Yeah, I use the regular Zoom features on my Mac and on my iPad. And it's not just for books, it's for handouts and things like that too.
Mm-hmm.
So what about class notes? I know a lot of the professors do their notes in PowerPoint.
I used to, but I really only sometimes I'll take a copy of the professor's PowerPoint, because a lot of times the professor's PowerPoints are really just like images, and they kind of shape their discussion around some of those images and figures. What I actually do is I take my own set of notes, and then there's a separate note taker in the class who will give me their notes at the end of class, and then I'll just go over all those notes and merge them at the end of the day. I found it worked best, because then I could like try to take the notes that I could, and I could fill in the gaps. It's really hard to kind of follow things verbatim, especially when it's a more like open discussion forum for class.
And you take your own notes on the laptop or your computer?
Yeah, for the most part, except for math.
Mm-hmm. That's more difficult on a computer to write integral signs and derivatives.
Well, I mean, in reality, I'm getting better at writing LaTeX notes, but I'm not good enough to keep up in class.
And what's LaTeX?
LaTeX is a typesetting language that a lot of computer scientists use. It's kind of like you're writing out the program, and then you can use a program that will take the code you wrote and turn it into a really nice document. It's nice because you can kind of type up mathematical symbols quickly without having to like point and click all over Word.
If you'd like to go back and listen to those other shows that we referenced, we'll have links to them in the show notes, which you can find at our website, www.viewpointsplus.net. And remember, starting at the beginning of January 2013, the show will be called Eyes on Success, and we'll have a new website at www.eyesonsuccess.net. That's all that's going to change is just the name. Same show, new name. That's it for show number 1249.
Next week on Viewpoints, we'll be hearing about NVDA, Non-Visual Desktop Access. This is a free and open source screen reader for use with Windows.
And we'll be speaking with one of its co-lead developers, Mick Curran. If you have any questions regarding something you've heard about on the show, or you'd like to share an idea for a future show, send an email to contact@viewpointsplus.net or call us at 585-258-0333, and we'll try to address your question in an upcoming program.
You've been listening to Viewpoints, hosted and produced by Nancy Goodman-Torpey and Peter Torpey, and distributed by WXXI Reach Out Radio. For detailed information or a full archive of programs, visit www.viewpointsplus.net. You can also follow us on Facebook or Twitter at Viewpoints Plus. We hope you will join us again next week for more information and updates on products for accessible living. And remember, beginning in January, we'll have a new name, Eyes on Success.